Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Matt Peck, Bulls writer at FanRag Sports and the host of the 312 on AM 1590 WCGO here in Chicago. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Bulls_Peck, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook at Facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, anywhere you find podcasts, you'll find us. Make sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Matt Peck holding down the fort here on a Friday show, getting you ready for the weekend. Jordan is down in Florida, so I went solo today, but I brought on a guest, our friend Casey Johnson, who covers the Bulls for the Chicago Tribune. Casey and I had a great chat earlier this morning about a lot of these young players that are coming through the Advocate Center in advance of the NBA draft. Also got his take on the report from yesterday that the Bulls were the only team in the NBA to not send a scout or any representatives to that NBA global camp in Italy. All of that and much more. So without further ado, here is our interview with Casey Johnson. Right now, we're very pleased to welcome back to Locked On Bulls one of our favorite guys to talk to. He is Casey Johnson. He covers the Bulls for the Chicago Tribune, and you can follow him on Twitter at KCJ Hoop. Casey, how you doing, bud? Busy days ahead with this NBA draft just a few weeks away.
Yeah, a couple. We're within 2 weeks, so obviously things will start ramping up here. A lot of disinformation will start materializing, and then we'll see mock drafts change, and then it'll be draft night, and we'll see how it all shakes down. Looking forward to it.
Well, we definitely want to get your thoughts on some of these young players that have been making visits to the Bulls. But before we do that, we have to get to the biggest story from yesterday. ESPN broke a story about the first ever NBA global camp that took place in Treviso, Italy, and mentioned that the Bulls were the only team in a 30-team league to not send a scout and or representative to this event. And ESPN cited the reasoning for that being the $10,000 fee that was attached to that for the league to recoup some expenses. You then, for the Tribune, came out and had a quote from Paxson denying that report and denying that it was about the $10,000 fee. Can you clear up some of this confusion about why it is the Bulls were the only team in the league to not do this?
Well, I mean, it's clearly stated in the story. I just basically was the figured if that one thing's going to be reported, you should probably get the Bulls side of it. And they claimed that it was not about the money, but that it was about the fact that they have great trust and confidence in their director of international scouting, Ivica Dukan, who's been with the organization a long time. They felt that he had a pretty strong working knowledge of most of the prospects at this camp. Also, they already had some individual draft workouts scheduled at the Advocate Center that they wanted Ivica present for. He's been part of the draft process here in Chicago, even though he's an international scout, for many, many years, and they wanted his eyes and ears in the room for the individual workouts that were already scheduled. It's pretty well documented that this global camp, which obviously is a great opportunity to get information on players, according to the ESPN story, as young as 15, was put together more or less last minute because another camp dissolved in the wake of the FBI investigation into corruption in college basketball. There's some financing pulled by a shoe company. And so the league took over this new, more or less what's called an international draft combine. And it was pretty hastily organized. I talked to some executives from other teams that while they were present, they didn't have even close to remotely top decision makers there. So it's something that sounds like in the future, when it gets a little bit more organized, similar to, you know, some of the summer leagues that have materialized over the years and become more streamlined and more organized, you know, I would certainly think the Bulls would be there. But this one was, you know, at a time it wasn't convenient for them. And so they made the choice not to attend. It's clearly, you know, bad optics. Probably they're not the only team of 30 not there, but it was, you know, the fact that it was about not wanting to pay a $10,000 fee is, from my estimation, not only just this is just my own opinion, as in a little I reported, just not really commonsensical for a franchise that makes as much money as the Bulls do. $10,000 is like $5 to you and me.
Right, exactly. I think that's why Bulls fans were so, you know, white hot rage enraged by that first report saying, like, are you kidding me? Is $10,000 the reason that you're not going to do this and you're the only team not to do this? But just before we move on from this topic, do you have any sense of, I mean, okay, if the event itself is poorly organized, that's one thing. But do you have a sense of who these players are, ages 15 to 23? Is there a real talent pool here at this event that the Bulls are not getting to see? Because whether or not the event's poorly organized, if there are NBA-level talents there, shouldn't the Bulls be there watching that event happen?
Well, so first of all, I want to say I didn't say poorly organized. I said hastily organized. Whether it was poorly organized or not, that's not what I want to convey. Second, I mean, I know extremely little about the event. So, you know, you can maybe talk to the guy who reported for ESPN.com if you want more information on the event. I get it. Look, you know, it's easy way for fans to get upset at a front office and an ownership that they're already angry about, that it just plays into their cheap narrative. And, you know, just getting past the money. Yeah, I mean, to your point, you know, are the Bulls missing an opportunity where they're the only team in the league not present? My sense is, you know, in reporting the Bulls side of things, is that they're very confident that they have a working knowledge of what they need to know from the event. It's not like Ivica, you know, he was not at the event, you know, couldn't get information about the event. He's been well connected in Europe for many, many years, but dating back to Tony Kukoc, over two decades of contacts and connections and et cetera. Here's another thing is I would say is that the Bulls historically have scouted and spent more money, or not, I shouldn't say more money, considerable amount of money in Europe over the past two decades, well before it was in vogue. And they feel that, you know, I shouldn't say they feel because I can't speak for them. Their commitment to Europe has been well documented and well spent over years. And some teams don't invest as much time and money in Europe as the Bulls and other teams do. And so this event was kind of a way for some of those teams maybe to play catch up. And the Bulls just felt like it was somewhat redundant, especially because they found out about it last minute, and they found out about it at a time when they already had an individual draft workout scheduled. As I mentioned in the piece, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they're there next year, but this year it just didn't work out for them.
All right. Well, as we're here talking with Casey Johnson on Locked On Bulls, hopefully that information and insight can at least temper some of those rages that were going across Bulls Twitter yesterday, thinking, are you kidding? First the $3.5 million cash considerations and now this? You got to be kidding me. Moving on, let's talk about some of these draft prospects we have coming through the Advocate Center leading up to the draft later this month. Interesting report from Joe Calley of the Sun-Times. It was either yesterday or this morning about the Trae Young idea. And another one of your colleagues, Vincent Goodwill, had a piece earlier this week saying the Bulls might actually be higher on some of these point guards, Trae Young, Colin Sexton, than we may think. And even though they have Chris Dunn in that spot, they might not be opposed to taking a point guard at seven if they believe that is the best player on their board. Also in that Catley piece, which I found interesting, was a note he made about the Bulls being unhappy with Chris Dunn's work ethic through the first month or so of the offseason. Can you speak to that and just how much validity there is to this whole idea of the Bulls taking a point guard?
Well, those are two separate issues. And as far as the one, I'm not going to touch it because it's not my reporting. So you'll have to ask the reporter of the story on that one.
Haven't heard anything about that from the front office or from anybody on the Bulls staff about Chris
Dunn? No, but I also haven't asked. I actually don't put as much stock in off-season stuff as some people, because here's the thing. It's what, June 8th? I will say at one of the individual draft workouts that I attended, I saw Chris Dunn. That's not to say that the Bulls are pleased or displeased with Chris Dunn's work ethic. I have no idea. I haven't asked. It's not a story that I'm interested in or concerned about June 8th. If it's September 8th and he's not back for the, you know, more or less unspoken mandatory pre-training camp stuff, yeah, that's an issue. And look, I'm not downplaying the importance of off-season work. The organization is on record as saying it's important for this core three to build chemistry. The players were asked about it down the stretch. It's just something that between, you know, the end of the season and now, it's something that hasn't really come up on my personal radar. If it's somebody else, it's important to somebody else, great. That's their story. But they're two separate issues. The point guard issue, whether or not they'll draft one, John Paxson addressed this directly in the season-ending news conference. He was asked directly, will you bypass a position if you feel like you are on paper set at that position? He said, absolutely not. We're going to draft the best player available. Look, the Bulls are not in position this early in a rebuild to draft on fit or need. They have to take the best player available, whether it's a point guard, big man, wing. They have to have their draft board slotted, and whoever falls to them at 7 and is the best player on the draft board, that has to be the pick. I don't know if that's going to be Trae Young. I don't know if that's going to be Wendell Carter Jr. I don't know if that's going to be Mo Bamba. I don't know if that's going to be Mikal Bridges. But they absolutely are not in a position to go, oh, you know what? We've got Chris Dunn at point guard. Trae Young can't be our guy. Colin Sexton can't be our guy. If those guys are the highest rated on their draft board, and they're there at 7, boom, you got to make that pick, and then you got to figure it out later. So the organization is on record publicly as saying that's what they'll do, and I fully expect them to take that approach come June 21st.
You mentioned a couple of the bigs that the Bulls might be flirting with at 7, Mo Bamba and Wendell Carter Jr. Seems to me like at this point there isn't a whole lot of hope for those Bulls fans who do want Mo Bamba to fall to 7, that will happen. Most believe that the Mavs will probably pick him up at 5, especially considering their unknowable future and unpleasant current situation with Nerlens Noel. I mean, let's say hypothetically Bamba is somehow still there at 7. Say Orlando takes Trae Young and Dallas takes a shot with Michael Porter Jr. I know that you have made some remarks in your reporting about how highly the Bulls are impressed with this young Wendell Carter Jr. kid. If those two are both on the board, do you think the Bulls have Wendell Carter ranked higher than Mo Bamba right now?
I don't know. I wish I knew the answer to that. I think it's really an intriguing question. It's not obviously like the Bulls are sharing with me their draft board. I will say that my sense is, I haven't reported hard the draft yet, other than just covering the draft workouts. Between now and June 21st, I hope to get a better sense of where the organization stands on specific players. But my sense from, you know, conversations I've had and intel I've tried to glean from around the league is that they are intrigued by both those guys highly. So I don't know if they have Trae Young higher or Mikal Bridges higher. What I will say is that both Bamba and Wendell Carter Jr. are two players that they've had in for individual workouts, and I know they're intrigued by. So there's also definite talk around the league that, yeah, if you want Bamba, you got, and you're at 7, you're going to have to go past Mavericks at 5 to get him. So I certainly think that's something the Bulls are you know, possibly going to be having internal conversations about if they haven't already. But, you know, he was very impressive, not only from a media standpoint, which matters very little, but just in his presence and his physical tools. Bulls spent some time with him at the combine, and then obviously had him in last week at the Advocate Center. So I wish I knew the answer of which of those two they had rated higher. Carter Jr. kind of fits more of the prototypical Bulls pick. That's easy to stereotype and say, but Bamba's got a lot of intrigue as well.
Going back to Trae Young for just a second, and this is, I want your opinion as someone who has watched a lot of basketball. Do you think that these Steph Curry, the next Steph Curry comparisons, are a bit of an overreach? I am one of what seems like a lot of Bulls fans who are skeptical about how Trae Young can transition his game to the NBA level, especially considering the sort of downtrend he had at his 1 year at Oklahoma as defenses sort of started to figure him out, and he was the biggest and most real threat on that Oklahoma offense. Even still, the kid, I mean, he did something that nobody had ever done before. He led the NCAA in scoring and assists. The kid's clearly got talent. I want to know your opinion of this young man. Do you think he can be a star point guard in the NBA?
Well, if you're going to use pie in the sky comparisons, I actually think a more accurate comparison would be Steve Nash. And I know for a fact that, yeah, I mean, because, and again, I'm not saying he's the next Steve Nash, but I'm just saying right. that if you're going to compare him to Steph Curry, you know, I think a more apt, you know, way ceiling type comparison would be Steve Nash because of what you just said, is his ability to not only shoot it, but also to play make. And I know for a fact that the Bulls were as, if not more so, intrigued by his playmaking ability than his, I mean, obviously the scoring ability is impressive and the shot making ability in the range was impressive to look at. But, you know, even once defenses did kind of solve him a little bit offensively in terms of scoring, his playmaking and his ball handling was still pretty much lights out. So if that's something that, you know, you are intrigued by, I think that is where he has an ability to make a big mark in the NBA. I'm terrible at predicting college to NBA because I don't watch a lot of college basketball, which is well documented. And look, let's just speak frankly here. I mean, this is guesswork for executives as well. I mean, you know, it's well documented that some of the more impactful rookies have gone later in the draft in recent years. Donovan Mitchell and Giannis being two of the biggest recent examples. Kyle Kuzma dropping as low as he did. I mean, even Jason Tatum was a number three pick. And if he did the redraft, my sense is he'd be number one right now. So it's a crapshoot for everybody. I do hang my hat on one skill. I think that almost always translates from college to the NBA is rebounding. It's one reason I personally am high on Wendell Carter Jr. And we can get into more reasons I'm high on him if you want to ask for my pick later in this podcast. Because I just tipped who I think I personally would want the Bulls to take. Not that I like playing.
Well, I don't think that's necessarily new. I feel like you've had some positive remarks about Wendell Carter Jr. already.
Well, we can get into the more detailed reasons why a little bit. But back to Trae Young. I have no idea if he's going to be a good pro. What I will say is I think his size and defensive concerns are probably legitimate. But you could have probably said that about Steph Curry or Steve Nash coming out of the draft, and they have turned out to be pretty good NBA players. So, he's definitely a polarizing prospect. I'm excited to get a chance to talk to him next week when he's in for the Bulls and maybe show him my Twitter avatar, which now features a picture of Trae Young.
It's great. It was great. Like you said, you were due for a new Twitter avatar, and that one is just absolutely choice.
Yeah, thank you. So, yeah, he's a polarizing prospect, so he's definitely going to be a, you know, top 10 pick, and I'm excited as anybody to see what kind of pro career he's going to have.
All right. Well, before we put you in John Paxson's chair and make you make the Bulls pick at 7, one guy that we haven't really touched on yet is a guy that has gotten a lot of attention in Chicago and among Bulls fans everywhere. And it seems to be a very polarizing kind of attention. And that's Michael Porter Jr., the kid who coming out of high school could have been projected to be the number one overall pick in this draft. Most people now expecting him to slide somewhere to the back end of the top 10 because of his back surgery and the fact that he missed most of his 1 year at Mizzou. But he has, since his year at Mizzou, relocated, at least temporarily, to Chicago, where his agency is based. He's staying here for the summer. There was an interesting report from a St. Louis radio station where his dad was talking about the fact that the Bulls team staff issued Michael Porter Jr. a physical He's got his pro day coming up later today, and that they will share that information and the results of that physical with the rest of the league. Did that strike you as anything kind of odd, or is that kind of just it's because he's in Chicago and that's why the Bulls are the team issuing the physical? What is your perception on how highly the Bulls value Michael Porter Jr. right now? Because it seems like he is really keen on being here.
Yeah, I would, you know, at first I kind of downplayed that aspect to it, but now, I don't know, there's like even something today where I guess he liked something on some podcast that Vince Goodwill and Mark Schanowski did and Kendall Gill, where he liked it on Twitter.
Got to keep an eye on those social media likes, man. They're everywhere.
Oh, my goodness. So, yeah, I kind of downplayed it, but, I mean, it does seem like, I mean, beyond the fact that he's based here, that is just because his agency's based here. It does seem like he's got a little bit of love for the Bulls and excitement with the potential for being drafted here. We asked him about it point blank at the combine, and he had some fun with it. So, but look, he's obviously going to be happy wherever he ends up. What I'll say about the physical stuff is that is even more so past him being based here because the agency's based here. It's more speaks to the long-standing and trustful relationship that the Bulls have with that agency. I mean, it's obviously led by Mark Martelstein, who's had, you know, oodles and oodles of clients on the Bulls. And so it's simply a matter of convenience for a unique medical situation. And yes, the Bulls will share those medicals with any interested teams around the league. That was part of the arrangement and agreement with the agency and the Bulls. I think the pro day is one thing. I think next week, you know, they're going to have a second situation for top 10 teams who are interested in. I think there's going to be some, you know, individual meetings there. So the Bulls will have a chance to sit down with Michael Porter Jr. And I don't have a sense of where their interest lies at all. It's been very hush hush if they are interested. So I haven't got much buzz about them being interested. That's not to say they aren't. I don't know. But if they are interested, they're keeping it pretty quiet. You can just go off history and say that pick would represent a risk that, for the most part, the Paxson Foreman regime have avoided. And I'm obviously not breaking any news there. That's not to say that they might not be intrigued by him. He's got a lot of talent. Like you said, he could have been the number one overall pick if he hadn't been hurt, or projected to be the number one overall pick. They do need a wing. So, yeah, it's going to be there are so many possibilities for the Bulls at 7. And like I said, if Bamba's their guy, they're going to have to try to trade up. So at this point, I think it can go a lot of different ways for the Bulls.
Well, yeah. Okay. So that being the case, you mentioned a lot of different ways this could go down and unfold, and it'll depend on who's there. Let's say that the Mavs do take Bamba, and now I'm putting you in John Paxson's seat. You have your pick of, let's say, you know, Trey Young, Mikal Bridges, Michael Porter Jr., Wendell Carter. Are you taking Wendell Carter first among that group?
I personally am, with the caveat that I'm a terrible basketball GM and a okay basketball journalist. Here's what I like about Wendell Carter Jr. beyond what I said before about how I think rebounding translates is the Bulls. And look, the Bulls are a long way away from a championship. I think we can all agree on that. But the Bulls right now, to me, have a lot of high maintenance is the wrong word, but they have a lot of players with a lot of needs. You've got Chris Dunn, who went through a very difficult rookie season. Just kind of, he talked always about how he wanted to get his swagger back. So he, in his mind, he got his swagger back his second year. So you're kind of massaging that situation. You got Zach LaVine, who thinks, you know, he's worth a max contract or, you know, close to it. And is coming off an ACL surgery. So he needs a lot of care and love. Larry Markkanen doesn't seem like he needs that, you know, much. He just seems like he goes about his business. But at some point, you know, he's going to emerge probably as your biggest offensive threat. So there's somebody you gotta not placate, but just you got to feed the beast. Mm-hmm. Wendell Carter Jr. to me looks, this is just having dealt with him twice in my life and talking to a lot of people about him. It stands for the right things. He stands for winning. He is all about the intangibles. I mean, who brings up the ability to set the right screens in interviews? And I know that's not sexy or important or high ceiling. Who talks about learning from Robin Lopez, who I think we all agree that we all love, but is just kind of a steady guy? I just think he brings what you need at this point of the rebuild, because he is he's got maybe not the highest ceiling of all these players we're talking about, but he's got the lowest floor, and you can pencil him in to being a starter, for a long time, and a low maintenance guy. I could be horribly wrong. I don't watch a ton of college basketball. He could be pretty boring, but the comps you hear are not only Al Horford, it's another one you hear is Elton Brand.
Right.
And look, I think we all agree that Elton Brand had, a very, very reliable, strong pro career. Obviously started in Chicago. So I don't know. I just think for a lot of reasons he makes sense to me. But I definitely agree that he, to some people, would represent a boring or safe pick. And they're players that probably have more upside or intrigue than him. But if I'm making the pick as a bad basketball GM, I'm picking Wendell Carter Jr.
All right, Casey. One last thing before we let you go. You mentioned that the Bulls have kind of some tricky situations and some egos to massage and the like this offseason. And also, of course, the big one is Zach LaVine's contract, which you mentioned. Given where the Bulls are now and the fact that, I agree with you. I think this team is still very far away from a championship or even championship contention. What did you make of that report from Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN earlier this week that the Bulls might be a quote-unquote sneaky active player in free agency this summer?
My reaction was, obviously there's no reporter more plugged in the entire universe than Woj. But my second reaction was with what roster spots. If they draft two guys, let's say the 22 is not a draft in stash, and they re-sign LaVine and Nwaba, which I know they are hopeful to do in both situations, you're at 14 guaranteed contracts. Now, clearly you can waive guys and stretch them or do whatever you want. You could also make an uneven trade where you send more players out because they're in an advantageous cap situation. And even if you only have one roster spot, you have the ability to get a near max player. So, I don't have any firsthand knowledge of their free agency plans at this point. I hope to get it between now and July 1st or have a better sense. I typically do in late June have a good sense of what they're going to do in free agency. I can just go by what they've said publicly at this point, and that is they're going to be conservative and patient and build this rebuild the right way. Maybe they have a restricted free agent in mind that they feel pretty confident they can throw a lot of money at and get. I don't have the answer to that yet. But look, if Woj says it, it's something you certainly got to monitor. And between now and July 1st, that's something I plan on doing. But I will say this. I know for a fact they are very hesitant to load down their books with cumbersome long-term deals at this point of the rebuild. So it would have to be one that they think it's a home run and that they feel like makes a lot of sense for them and are confident they can get done.
All right, Casey. Oh, and real quick here. I know this is something you do a lot. Jordan and I have been doing a lot too, especially in the downtime of the season when the Bulls are sitting at home watching the playoffs happen, fielding a lot of mailbag questions about the draft, about the upcoming offseason and free agency. People keep coming at me with this idea that signing Jabari Parker, speaking of free agency, is this wonderful, perfect fit. And it's like, hey, he's a Chicago kid. Let's bring him on to the Bulls. The Bulls kind of need a player in his position. Does that idea make any sense to you? I mean, this is a team that just went through the Derrick Rose years and already have a guy on their roster who they're trying to get healthy after missing most of this season with an ACL. I mean, Parker just has too many red flags to me. What's your thought on that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not reporting anything here. This is my personal opinion. I feel like, two ACL situations in your recent, one in your recent past, one in your present is enough. I mean, obviously you hope Anthony, you hope Jabari Parker, I almost called him Anthony Davis. You hope Jabari Parker is extremely healthy moving forward. He's been through a lot. He's got a ton of athleticism, but two ACL tears to me would be, even if he's healthy and, even if he stays healthy the rest of his career, and that's obviously what you hope for. The fact that he's got two ACL tears in his past would be a red flag enough for me.
Thank you. That's all I wanted. That's all I wanted to hear. I just wanted to hear that I'm not crazy. All right, Casey, as always, we really appreciate the time. He's Casey Johnson. He covers the Bulls for the Chicago Tribune. You can follow him on Twitter, get all of his content there at KCJ Hoop. Casey, have a great weekend, buddy, and we look forward to talking again in or around draft time.
All right, thanks, Matt. Take care.
All right, buddy. All right, thanks again to Casey Johnson. Always a pleasure chatting with him about Bulls basketball and the NBA. Hopefully his follow-up report on that whole NBA global camp nonsense can put a little bit put us all at ease a bit and not be white hot with rage about the Bulls deciding not to do that, because as you heard Jordan and I say on this show yesterday before we got the full story, certainly fed into the narrative that this Bulls front office and the ownership group is cheap and they value money more than they value players. So let's all take a deep breath. Thanks to Casey for clearing that up for us. And hopefully the Bulls participate next time around, like Casey said. Just a reminder that we got a giveaway going on right now. A 16 by 20 autographed photo of the one, the only, the Worm, Dennis Rodman, rocking a Red Bulls 91 jersey. Even got Magic Johnson hanging out there in the background of the photo. Very cool piece of Bulls memorabilia. All you got to do to enter is leave us a review on iTunes or your preferred podcast platform. And if you want to, throw us your favorite memory about Dennis Rodman and maybe we'll share it on the show. You can enter this by just taking a screenshot of that review and sending it to us via email at lockedonbulls@gmail.com or sending it to our text line at 331-979-1369. Our text line does receive photos, so you can just attach a quick screenshot to a text you send to us. Again, that number is 331-979-1369. Enter for your chance to win this autographed Dennis Rodman photo. That's it for today. For my co-host, Jordan Malley, this is Matt Peck saying thanks for listening. Be sure to tune in next week and the week after as we get closer to the draft. We've got some really great stuff coming up across the network. Going to be doing some mock draft action with all of our Locked On NBA partners, so be sure to stay tuned for that. But for Casey Johnson, for Jordan Malley, this is Matt Peck saying have a great weekend, Bulls Nation. We will talk to you on Monday. We're out.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.